Greetings and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth. You may call in to share your experiences, colorism, to pose a question, or just to give a general comment. You may do so by dialing area code 914-338-1308. And now, to begin our show, here's Dr. Culbreth. Greetings, listeners, and welcome to Dynamics of Colorism for Sunday, August 24th, 2014. I am your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth, and we're coming to you live as we do every, well, correction, this is not a Thursday, it's a Sunday. We're holding a special show tonight for our good friends who are filmmakers, Ms. Kimberly James and Mr. Michael Cook, and we're going to talk about their films that they're in the process of putting together, titled Across the Tracks. Dr. John Kim is co-hosting the show with me tonight, and we are ecstatic about the film. We're just in love with it. So tonight, we're going to have an opportunity to talk to Ms. James and Mr. Cook live, and we're going to talk about their film, why they put it together, and it's just so exciting, and we are so thrilled to be working with them, and we'll tell you all the good stuff later on. But right now, before we even get into the good stuff, let me give you the announcements for this week. As we always do with the National Survey on Colorism, we are still looking for members to join and work with our team. As noted, the survey is going to be administered in all across the United States and internationally. So we're looking for team members to help come on board who can serve as interpreters for the survey, translated rather, into other languages. With regard to the conference on colorism, our team is together. We're going to start holding our conference calls, I think, the first week of September. Once again, if you're interested in joining the committees, remember you do not have to be someone who's from academia. We want people from all walks of life to be involved because the conference on colorism, it's about you. And it's about everyone coming together to talk about colorism and deal with the colorism issues that are still plaguing our societies. With regard to I Am Beautiful ICP, Dr. John Kim and I are working really hard on that. We've recruited a great team. And actually, my daughter's joined our team, everyone. So this is even, it's really like a plus for me. And we'll have good information and surprise coming. With regard to Complexity Magazine, we're still seeking staff to work with us. As you know, Dr. John Kim is the editor-in-chief of the magazine, and we are excited about this coming together, and hopefully, if things go well for us, we're looking at getting our first issue out early next year. Again, we're looking for people to come on board, looking for writers, we're looking for people who can conduct interviews. Additional information will be on our blog site. So look forward to that. And then, of course, back to our unsung leaders and change agents. We honored our first unsung leader and change agent, I think just 2 weeks ago, and that was Ms. Amira Freeman. Look forward to the third week in September when we honor our next unsung leader and change agent. So enough of the announcement and all the other stuff. Let's get into the great stuff that we're going to talk about tonight with Ms. Kimberly James and Mr. Michael Cook. Dr. John Kim is going to introduce them and read you their bios. Okay, Dr. John Kim.
Okay, we have some really special guests tonight. The first person I want to introduce is Michael Cook, who is one of the co-writers and presently is a director and director of photography. He has a very extensive background. He's originally from Atlanta. He began his career at Turner Broadcasting, where he cleaned lenses and hung lights, and quickly moved up to camera operating position, where he continued to work for Turner Broadcasting and its parent companies like CNN and Cartoon Network. And again, because of his talent, he climbed the ladder of success and became director of photography, where he not only used his gift and skill in knowing light and color and composition, but he also started to do more music videos and commercials. And he even did his first feature film called God Loves a Fighter, which was filmed in Trinidad and won the best narrative featured in the 2013 Trinidad and Tobago Film Festival. So he has shot all over the world, and he's so well-known that even Billboard 100 artists really try to get him to and work with him because he has such a great vision and is able to bring stories to life. Our second guest is Kimberly James, who is another co-writer and producer. She has 13 years experience internationally with TV and film. She was born in the Midwest, spent half her life in Asia, Africa, and different parts of the U.S., has worked in over 30 countries and wandered through 17 others. She has worked on various seasons of American Amazing Race, which has won 5 awards internationally. And she is also a daredevil that loves to dangle off skyscrapers, snuck up with cheetahs, and she's just a really amazing woman, and she's a member of the Producers Guild of America and is now based in New York City. So we are so happy to have both of them on our show tonight.
Thank you so much.
So great. So happy to be here.
We are excited that you guys are here with us, and we just think this show is so exciting. Listeners, so that you know, Ms. James and Mr. Cook gave us a special preview of their script, and we're in love with it. It was love at first sight. It is so awesome, exciting. And here's the funniest thing, you guys. Everybody that knows me and Dr. John Kim will tell you this. They'll be like, oh, she's hardcore. She's like, she's not going to say she likes anything. If I like it, trust me, it is perfect. Right, Dr. John
Kim?
Wow.
Humbling words, humbling words. Thank you.
Yeah, coming from experts like you, that's just amazing.
We love it, and what we want to do tonight, listeners, and here's the thing before I even get any further, if you guys want to call in and ask them a question, you want to comment, our listening line is 914-338-1308. So if you call in, if I don't answer right away, give us some time because we're going to be having such a great conversation. So even before I even get into talking about colorism issues and everything, Ms. James and Mr. Cook, we want you guys to know that we're supporting you 100% with your film, that we're endorsing it. And when you start filming, Dr. Jung Kim and I were laughing the other night on the phone, and we said, well, we're both going to be down. When they start filming, we're both going to be there. And
what?
And I'm somebody who doesn't like to travel, trust me.
You'd be a welcome addition on set, please, by all means.
We need extras.
Definitely.
An extra role for you, something. But it's just, so for our listeners, before we get into our conversation, what I wanted to do is just go over what colorism is for those of you who may not be aware, because the film, Across the Tracks, that is the name of their film, the film focuses on colorism, and it is so deep and enlightening. And it's just, I'll let them tell you the rest of it, because let me shut up and just get into colorism. But so that you understand what colorism is and how it functions, colorism involves distinctions that are basically based on the skin color, meaning light, medium, or dark complexion. And what happens is that it results in the favorable or the unfavorable treatment of individuals, again, based on the lightness or darkness of their skin color. And I'll give you examples in a few minutes. And with its foundation deeply rooted in white superiority, white supremacy, white privilege, racism, prejudice, and stereotypes, you know, colorism is complex in nature, and it's so complex, everyone, because it occurs interracially, and on top of that, it's just detrimental to the psychological well-being of its victims. Now, when we start looking at colorism, it's important to understand that it occurs interracially, meaning that it could be a member of one racial group making a distinction based on the skin color of members belonging to a different racial group. So, for example, it could be a white person looking at a dark-complexioned black person and saying, perhaps, I don't want to associate with her. I don't want to hire her because her skin is so too dark. I prefer to hire the light-skinned girl or to associate with the light-skinned girl. It happened, say, it can happen with a Latino and an Asian person. It can happen with a Black and a Latino person. So, you know, again, this form of colorism results in preferential treatment, prejudicial and or disparate treatment of the victims. Now, when we start talking about interracial colorism, this involves a member of one racial group making a distinction based on the skin color of another person or members, rather, belonging to the same racial group. So, for example, interracial colorism occurs when you have a Black against Black. It could be a light-skinned Black person against a dark-skinned Black person, a lighter-complexioned Asian against a darker-complexioned Asian. Now, this form of colorism is more complex than interracial colorism, and it also results in the preferential treatment or prejudicial and or disparate, you know, treatment of its victims. Now, historically, people of color have been victims of interracial and intraracial colorism. Now, the occurrence of interracial, of course, colorism is more prevalent among Black Americans. I mean, we could just really say people of color. Now, before we even get any deeper, I wanted to clear up a lot of misconceptions that were going around on the Internet and I saw on Twitter and a lot of blogs about colorism. One of the biggest misconceptions about colorism is that it only involves light-skinned people. And colorism can occur with a dark-skinned person, treating a light or medium-skinned person disparately because they're not being viewed as, let's say, I'm just throwing this out there, as being maybe authentically Black. And this is when it involves Black people. And light-skinned, and here's the biggest thing that everyone has to realize, colorism can occur with someone who's light, medium, or dark. So, for example, you can have a light-complexioned person who is treating a medium-complexioned person disparately because of their skin color. You can have a dark-complexioned person treating a lighter or medium-complexioned person disparately, and it goes, you know, all around. The key thing to understand and remember is that when we're talking about how colorism affects people, the bottom line is that it's very detrimental. It leaves psychological scars. It really can destroy families, friendships. We see a lot of it in the work environment. As a matter of fact, color claims with the EEOC have increased by over 300% over the years. And that's a high number. I think Ms. James told me the other day it was like 400-something percent. So that's really, I'm sorry, Ms. Torres told me that it's really high. Now, another misconception about colorism is that, and I'm just going to say this simply stated, guys, colorism is a distinction based on skin color. It's your skin. And it is not hair texture. And a lot of people, and even a woman whom I gave a presentation months ago, was like, no, colorism is about hair. So that we understand, everybody, when we talk about colorism, remember, distinction based on your skin. When we add in hair and other phenotypes into the mix, this is known as what's called the colorism complex. And the colorism complex involves the interracial colorism complex, as well as the intraracial colorism complex. And when my book comes out, I discuss and explain all this in my book, which hopefully if I don't get out by the end of this year, it'll be out the first of next year. It's important to understand that because a lot of people would get into heated arguments and discussions because they don't clearly understand that the colorism complexes exist. And part of those colorism complexes is when you throw in the hair, the nose, the lips, the eye color, the facial structure as a whole. So we need to understand that normally we see the interracial colorism complex involving the hair and the other types when it involves people of color. And that's what's really important to understand. So I hope I gave you guys a good overview of colorism. So when we start talking about the film and we start talking about how the characters look, you'll understand exactly what we're talking about with the colorism. And it's important to remember also that the effects of colorism can be physical and they can be psychological. And psychologically, they can really affect people's self-esteem, the love of themselves, the pride in themselves, you know, really deep issues. And when it affects them physically, this is where we start seeing, and this is the biggest issue with a lot of young black girls that we're dealing with, where, and even over in Africa and other countries, in India, where they start bleaching their skin because they want their skin to be lighter, because they believe that light skin or skin in close proximity to whiteness is better than dark skin. So that is how we see colorism. Those are the psychological and physical. Those are some of the effects. For more information, of course, you can buy my book and read it when it comes out. Okay, that's the good stuff. Now let's get into, let's talk to our guest. Miss Jane, let me ask you first, what prompted your interest in colorism?
My interest in colorism?
I'm here.
Yeah. I am, like, my interest in colorism came from, like, I'm Asian American, and I'm mixed Asian American. So, like, my color, my heritage has always been something that's in question. So the idea of identity and, like, identifying as either white or black or Asian or whatever it is has always been something that's part of my life. Like, whatever I am, whatever group that I'm in, I'm always the other. I've never been, like, the inclusive group. So I can understand where in our film, I can understand where Ella is wanting to be another group so that she could be the in crowd.
Right, that's interesting. Excellent, interesting point, Mr. James. What about Mr. Cook? What about you? How did you? What piqued your interest in it?
Well, for me, like my background, I'm an African American. I grew up in Georgia, and my parents, my grandparents, on both sides of my family, about two generations of teachers going back. My great grandmother started one of the first black schools in the town. We're actually filming our film in. So it's like education has been a huge part of my life very early on. So my interest in colorism was really just growing up and learning about it firsthand from the people who experienced it, who fought, you know, through the injustice during the civil rights movement. And I've always kind of looked at it as something to just know more about. I've always wanted to just grow and just seek more knowledge in the realm of colorism because it dealt with so many things that still affect our lives today. So I guess I was predisposed to, I guess, be interested in colorism just because of the way I was brought up and my racial makeup and the country that I live in, I guess you could say.
Wow. Interesting. Awesome. Okay, Dr. John Kim.
I want to know, I know you're both the co-writers and with this film, but when I was reading your storyline, I don't know where you came up with it because it was amazing. I love how, you know, one of your characters, decides to then become white to fit in. And so how did you even think of that concept? I mean, I know it sounds like you're both very knowledgeable in colorism and you understand, like, what girls who are dealing with, you know, I don't want to say low self-esteem, but colorism issues, just that pressure to have lighter skin. So, I mean, I want to know, like, what inspired you or how did you come up with that storyline?
The idea kind of actually presented itself. Like I mentioned earlier, it was a lot of it was to do with my upbringing, with my parents, with my grandparents. I mean, being a black male in this country and, you know, having a very, very fortunate that I had the strong family foundation that I did because my grandparents and my parents made sure I knew every day of the week that, you know, this is where you came from. This is what we fought for. This is where you are now. So the story is actually an amalgamation of all the things I've just kind of grown up and knew and kind of twisting it and turning it. And when I linked up with Kim James, she brought her own, I guess you could say, her take on how she grew up as well, being of a mixed heritage, living in the same country. And so we kind of took our both experiences. We both knew of passing and a lot of accounts that just kind of happened over the years, and it was it was also a motivation to shoot something in this very small town that my grandparents lived in. I've always wanted to shoot something there. I just really had to find that story. So I guess you could say it kind of presented, really presented itself. And, yeah, I could honestly go on for hours and hours about why this story is what it is. Like, I was raised by very strong African-American women, and I, for one, want to see more films with strong female leads as well. And, you know, all of those things, one way or another, influence the story that is across the tracks, is our film today.
I think also for me, because of my mixed heritage, like, I've always passed. I've always, like, wherever I've been, I think I touched on it before, like, I've always passed for something or the other. Like, interesting for me now is, like, living in New York. New York is, like, the first place that I kind of blend in. But everybody, like, a lot of people assume that I'm Latina. So, like, I blend in because I'm Latina, but I'm not Latina at all. So, like, the passing is just, I mean, it's always been a part of, like, I've always been very ambiguous. And I remember as a kid, I remember going to class and, like, I went to a Christian school, and like my instructor told us about these kids behind the Iron Curtain who would stand at gunpoint, and like they had to like stand up for their faith. And I was like, whoa, at 10 years old, I don't know if I could do that. You know, like that's really incredible. And I feel like that's the kind of decision, like our young Ella is, you know, she's standing up. She's like being asked to stand up for something. And she's like, well, if I just do this, you know, I can have like soda pop in the front counter, and I can like go to prom, and I can, you know, like it was just like it was that kind of a decision. And I feel like I felt like I reflected that so many times in my life. I couldn't judge her. You know, I can judge her. Like there, it's not a decision that everybody would make, but it's, we all have fallibility in our lives.
Exactly. Dr. Jung Kim does a lot of her work in mixed race identity, and we, just a couple of months ago, we conducted a survey on mixed race identity, because if, as you notice, America, as America continues to go on and on, we're seeing America turn to what many, I always classify as, and I coined this term for one of my students, a browner America. And we're seeing a lot of mixed race identity people, and it was an issue before where people of mixed race identity were almost, and Dr. Jung Kim, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't it as if they were being forced to choose how they were going to identify their race instead of them being able to self-identify?
Yeah, so what happens, I mean, through research and with our own interaction with mixed-race students, yeah, especially like when they go to school, and mixed-race students will try to, you know, identify with one race. And what makes it difficult is they'll either try to overcompensate and try to really do whatever it takes to fit into one race, and or, I don't know, and if they don't fit in, they'll fall into deep depression. And then, you know, that also goes with the whole dating issue where, you know, they'll try to go for, you know, someone of whatever race that they're half or part of or a quarter of. And again, like that has led to a lot of depression if they are denied. But I think, you know, seeing college students who are of mixed race, it's a difficult thing that Dr. Colbert and I constantly are always talking about, how, you know, our generation, especially college students, are just mixed race population is just increasing, and we both feel like, you know, schools just, they're not ready for it. And yet these mixed-race students are going to bring in so much more interesting conversations. You know, we're not going to just hear from a person that's solely Black or solely Asian, but bringing in the multiple races will just bring more deeper conversation. And that's definitely something that colleges need, is to have these deeper conversations so that stereotypes are broken down. But what mix are you? I think you're Korean and Black. Is that what I understood?
No, I'm what? Korean and Caucasian. Like my dad's heritage is English and German, but a long, long, long time ago.
Okay, I find that really interesting. Another thing that I find really great, that's really ringing true, that I love about your film, that when I was reading through it, was, you know, since both of us are, Dr. Colbert and I are always interacting with girls of who are Hispanic, Asian, or Black. And I was telling Dr. Colbert last year that, you know, I've had a lot of girls, when we talk about race issues, who say, you know, number one, like if they're the darker sister, they'll say, yeah, I'm here, and my mom or my family or my aunt or my grandmother has pretty much told me, like, I'm the Black one of the family, and so I need to get an education because that's the only way that I can make my life better. Whereas my sister, who's lighter skinned, like, she fools around, she does whatever she wants, because even though she's not so much better looking and feature-wise, but just the fact that she has lighter skin, like, her family, their families tell them, you know, whether verbally or non-verbally, that, well, you know, that light-skinned sister or person has a better chance of marriage and bettering their life solely because of their lighter skin. And so I just love that this is definitely a film that nobody has even discussed or has even, you know, brought in the two. I love, first of all, that you bring in two sisters. So that's definitely something that my students are always talking about. It's always especially between females and always between sisters. And even having that, you know, your sisters, you're supposed to be close, but then, you know, society or your family separates you based off your skin color, and you're aware of that from a young age. And just even, like, looking at, you know, the two sisters in the film, I haven't seen the film, but in the script of how they grow, develop, the personalities change, you know, just their interests, how that develops, and how society sees them. I mean, I love that you tackle all of that because it's just so real. And I think, you know, just like that film that came out called Black Girls, that really brought in a revolution for a lot of girls of color. I think this is going to be a really big film that's going to bring a whole different revolution for girls of color and for the issue of colorism. So I'm really happy to see this.
Thank you. We're excited to make it.
Like, very excited to make it.
And we've been shocked by the response that we've gotten from people. Like, I mean, speaking to you and then speaking to other people, like even in just casting, when we were casting for roles, it was obviously a very specific casting process because we had to have two sisters, that one was fair and one was darker, so they had to look like each other, but like mm-hmm. have the different skin tone. But then we also had to cast them as older. It was a challenge. Mm-hmm. But in casting for them, like, we were able to talk to some of the people, and they had their own stories that were just the same. Like, I spoke to one woman, and she said that her I think her mother or her aunt was very fair-skinned, and her brother, like, her uncle was darker, and, like, her uncle would have to go to the back of the bus when they were kids, and then her sister or her mother would be able to sit in the front right by the bus driver. So there was privilege. Mm-hmm. And there was other stories. I met someone, I just told someone about the film, like just a random stranger. And she said, oh, I had a great aunt who had that story. Like she moved from somewhere to Raleigh, North Carolina, and she saw her cousin there. She saw her cousin on the street, and her cousin was very fair skinned, and she tried to say hello, and her cousin just passed on by, and she was like, oh, she's passing. She just, like, there's so many stories like this that, like, have come out of the woodworks. Like, people, it was so real.
And you know what's really
interesting, too.
Great, Dr. Duncan. No,
I was going to say, you know, but I love that you made, you know, Tara and Ella, you know, sisters, and one was dark and one was light. But, you know, the fact that Ella decided to become white, and yet that's not something that's just in a film, but you can see that today. I mean, not like, well, more like, you know, like the Census Bureau. You hear about all the time the articles where people who are Asian will say, well, because they're applying for colleges or they want that scholarship, they'll mark, either they won't say what their race is or they'll say white, even though they're Asian, to better their chances. And so this is something that's happening, you know, even now in society where people, even though they are of a certain race, you know, one race, they will, you know, well, my ancestors back, my great-great-grandfather or mother was, you know, American Indian. So I'm going to mark down American Indian, even though, you know, I have two parents who are Asian or white, you know. And so you see that because it's been an opportunity for them if they don't, if they mark a certain race down. And the same thing, like in this film, like Ella putting down that she's white, you know, it, it gives her a better chance with her education. So it's just, I love that even though it's set in the 1960s, it's something that, you know, it's so pertinent to today's society.
And, it really is.
You're just gonna, yeah, I really feel like you're going to reach a lot of people, and it's just, it's going to be a real big conversation starter.
And that's what we really wanted. That's another reason we chose to have, like, do this film and have the current, the flashbacks, and it take place in the present, so people can actually see how a choice like this at that time could still affect you in the current, you know, 2000 era. Because I think that's an issue sometimes with films. It's like, even if it's set in the past, people still think, well, it's in the past. But that's our, what's one of our many, our ways we show the relevancy of this problem, is that we just see how a choice like this made in the time where there was an evidence, there was a race that essentially was treated better, how it would affect the relationship years and years later. Like, what would that look like? And I think that's really the big question we wanted to make sure that people were asking. It's like, what would this situation be like?
But you know what is, what I think is really great about your film and reading the script is because there are people today who are probably like Ella and Tara's age as adults who are still carrying around those scars. And Dr. John Kim can tell you, since we've been, you know, working with the Colorism Project, we've met people who have such horrible scars from colorism, and they're older now, but they don't speak to a sister or a brother or a family member. Or there's one side of the family that doesn't associate with the other side because of the skin color and because someone made a decision to pass, and they passed all of their lives, and they continue to do it. And despite the fact that it may have destroyed families, they did it. And there are some who regret it, and there are others who are like, well, what the heck, it's life, you go on, and you do what you have to do. But what's so great about your film is because, like you noted and Dr. John Kim noted, it is saying to the world today, everybody, take a look at your family, look at your friends, look at the people you associate with, and if you really look hard and deep and really start deep conversations, I'm quite sure a lot of people will realize that the same issue that they'll see in this film could be in some of their families.
Absolutely.
So that's, you know, it's really important. And when we talk about passing, because back in like even before the 60s, they always had the skin color tests that they used. They used the flashlight test, the hair comb test, the door test. Of course, we know about the brown paper bag. And I'll tell you guys what's so interesting and why your film is so important for people in the millennium to view, to see this film, is because just last year, you guys, on Twitter, we had people doing the pound team light skin, pound team dark skin, like this little minor war where you had the lighter skin thinking they were better than the dark. And then I've noted on my show several times where you have a lot of groups that are coming up now where it's, you know, saying for dark girls only. And I understand their point is that they want to bring light to the fact that, hey, we're here, hello, we exist, stop ignoring us. But it's what it is, and indirectly, and people don't get it, is that it's still a form of colorism, because you're still making a distinction based on the skin tone, where you're saying the only girls that can be in this group are the dark-skinned girls. And we've seen incidents where, and it's outraged me, another reason why your film is so important to wake people up is that we've seen, they've had cruises, a big famous disc jockey, I'll just say his name, Tom Joyner, he would have cruises each year, and on their cruises they would have a light skin and dark skin competitions. And
wow.
What bothered me is because we're seeing so much colorism on college campuses, and this guy has this big morning show where all these young kids listen to him, but then on the air you're talking about how light skin and dark skin people act at Thanksgiving. You're talking of, you know, you're actually having cruises and people come on your cruise, and you're having games and competitions where all the light-skinned people on this team and all the dark-skinned people on that team. That's pathetic, especially, you know, in this time and age. And it's not, and colorism is not something that you can joke, you should laugh about or joke about. We've even seen instances where you'd see parties where they would say light-skinned girls could get in early before 10 p.m., but if you were dark-skinned, and this is just last year and the year before, So it's not as if this was back in the 60s or the 70s or even the 40s. We're talking about now. And it bothered me, and I think one of my shows that I did in 2012 or 2013, we talked about this because the fact of what Ella and her sister went through, Ella's decision to become white, you know, really, it was a heavy weight for Tara to deal with. But in a modern-day times, we're still seeing people make these distinctions and associations based on skin color. And if we go back to looking like at the skin color test that they used years ago, they had the test where the door test where someone wanted to go, if a guy wanted to go to a party, rather, it's called the color tax test, rather. If his date was too dark, he had to pay a higher fee for her to get into the party. If she was light and had a certain skin color, she could just get in for, you know, the regular fee or for free. So now when we start seeing in modern times people using these same practices and or they had a competition, I think it was a bikini or a bathing suit competition last year, where they wanted people to choose better. And if this is exactly what it said, the light-skinned girl, the medium complexion, or the dark skin, who was the finest girl? And they weren't basing it on bodies. It was based on skin color. Then another young lady was going around, and this is so disturbing because sometimes people don't understand. They think that they're bringing colorism to the light by their actions or events, but she was actually had I think it was a presentation, and she had people come into the room, and she was seating them using the brown paper bag. That was like the worst you could ever do, worst thing. Another young lady was going to a school system, and this was just last year or the year before last, also teaching little children about colorism. And again, she was using the brown paper bag, having all the light-skinned children sit here, the dark-skinned children on one side, the medium-toned children in another section. And the problem with that is that that's continuing the cycle of colorism, and she didn't realize that. Now, the beauty of your film that your film is saying, look, here's colorism. Look at what happened between these two sisters. And when you see them, and, you know, as they're older, it's so, oh my gosh, it's like almost heartbreaking because Tara never let go of it. She never let it go. And I just think what you guys are doing is something that is going to put it this way, it's going to start the dialogue that we really need to have. And when I say the dialogue we need to have, we need a meaningful dialogue which people can look at your film and walk away from your film and start a conversation that can continue on and on. So
exactly.
It's so great you say that because that's exactly what me and Kim, like, we got into this film, and that was our overall goal. Like, it wasn't to win $1 million or win all these awards, which obviously both those things would be nice, but we really just wanted to make a piece of cinema that could start a dialogue in people. You know, like, we wanted to use our gifts that we have as filmmakers to, you know, challenge conventional thinking and just get people talking. And the fact that you said that means that we're on the right path. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you something else. I applaud the both of you for doing this because if you think about it, we're seeing all kinds of movies and films today. And Dr. Jung Kim and I were talking about this not too long ago, and we were saying, why, with everybody knowing that colorism is such an issue globally, you know, we need to see a film here in the United States that focuses on colorism and really goes back. We needed a film that does exactly what you're doing. You go back and you give a historical perspective as about the issues and about the colorism and about the race issues. We have not seen that until now, until your film. So I applaud you in that aspect, number one, because when you do... And seeing this and reading your script, of course, which we can't talk about in detail, but it was just reading it for me. I was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. And then, like I told you, by page one, I was in love. And, you know, and I said a note to Dr. Jung Kim. I was like, unbelievable. Wait till you read the script. You're going to flip. And it's amazing because, as you know, we talk about, we have I Am Beautiful, where we try and help girls of color deal with the skin color and learn to love themselves and self-esteem. And you guys just put it in a film. So that's another point, and I really think what we would like to do also, once the film is finished, is that we want to get this out there, and I think it's something that can help young girls understand how and why they should embrace who they are, love the color of their skin, their racial identity or their identity, be proud of who they are, because there are consequences when they try and, you know, alter or change or deny. So I think on so many fronts, this film is going to be so meaningful to so many people, and I highly recommend that young girls actually watch this film. They need to. Dr. Jung Kim, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I hope it's not just young girls who go and see this film. I hope it's girls with their families that go and watch this film. I mean, definitely friends should go together, but families, like, really need, I think this will be a real conversation starter, especially since, you know, a lot of times it's not only people who are not blood-related, but those who are blood-related who really have a lot to say, especially about, you know, skin color issues, colors and issues. So I believe that this will be a big conversation starter where parents and grandparents will realize, I have a granddaughter, I have a daughter, and I really think about how I treat these two. When I read the script, something that really I couldn't help feeling was, I didn't know who, like, I wanted two sides, but I liked Ella and Tara so much. And I, you know, from the experiences of my students who are female to have light skin and talking about everything that they have to go through and how they feel like they have to push down their race to be more accepted, even though they're lighter skinned. And at the same time, you know, girls who are darker skinned who feel like they're being judged because their skin is so dark. And it does, like, hold up anger in both the lighter skinned and the darker skinned girls. And they both feel not accepted by the other. And so, as much as I wanted two sides, I couldn't, because I could relate to both of their anger, the disappointment, and even, like, Ella, like, it's such a, the notable answer would be, like, well, Ella, like, you should like her or you should not like her, but I couldn't help thinking what Ella had to go through, she had to deny herself to move ahead. And I think a lot of times that's exactly what people who are of color feel like to get ahead, to move ahead in society or in school or within a relationship, not only a dating relationship, there's a part of it that you have to deny or reject. And that's really a hard thing to have to come through and realize. So I love that you even touched that role and really showed that. And even right now I look at the website and I look at the young girls who you chose to play, young Ella and young Tara, and I was actually wondering, like, who are they going to choose for young Ella? And in society, you know, in the media would have chosen a young Ella, probably, I would have thought, with, like, straight hair, who looked very white. But I like who you chose. I mean, her hair
is she's amazing.
Curly.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like, young Ella and young Tara, I mean, like, all the casts that we've selected so far are amazing. But, like, as far as, like, our young cast, like, they got it. They really have it. Like, if you could see their straight-up first audition, they got it.
Florida folks.
You know,
yeah.
It's gorgeous. You know what I would like to see you guys do with this, and I'm probably jumping the gun, this would be an ideal HBO miniseries.
Don't tempt us with those.
Your
words.
Mouth.
Let me tell
you. HBO is listening right now. We've already had that dream. We are ready for it.
We are ready.
Let me tell you what I said. The other night, I want to blame the two of you because I didn't get into bed until like 4:30 in the morning because I was up reading the script, so I'm blaming you. And
here's
the thing. It was so awesome until I was sleepy and I was tired. I'm like, let me turn the page, just one more page. And each time I turned the page, I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop here, mark it with a yellow highlighter, and tomorrow morning I'll continue it. Well, long story short, it's 4:30 in the morning and I'm still reading your script. But that's how you know, it just grabbed you and it drew you into it. And when I finished reading it, I said, this has to become a HBO miniseries where, we'll talk about this later, but it has, because the reason being is because it is so deep. It is so deep on so many levels, and it's so enlightening. And it's basically, you know, it's like a wake-up call for people. It really is, because to see how skin color issues has separated two sisters, and it's still an issue. Mm-hmm. You know, let me shut up. Tell us, you guys tell us, what is Across the Tracks all about?
All right. Yeah, I guess we should probably do this for all the people out there who don't really know.
I know, right?
Across the Tracks is a film that's set in the late 60s in Deep South, Georgia. We follow two African-American sisters, Ella and Tara, and they're both of mixed heritage. Like, their parents are African-American, but through a strange twist of fate, the father's a little more light-skinned. Like, Ella, the youngest, comes out more fair-skinned than Tara, the older sister. Obviously, all the racial aggression going on at that time, Jim Crow laws, integration in school. Ella, you know, she's tired of being picked on for being treated less than, so she tries to pass as white. And our film follows the two sisters in the late 60s when Ella makes her decision, and it also follows the two sisters in the early 2000s, 40 years later, to see how their relationship is maintained.
Wow. 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 Awesome. Oh. And go ahead. I'm sorry. Was somebody getting ready to speak? Here's what the amazing thing about it. How is the colorism piece actually presented in that film? How does it come to light that you're viewing the film? How is it coming out?
Well, honestly, this film, it's about a lot of things, but it is about colorism. Like, that's one of the main themes that it is about. It really just goes to show everything we've been talking about. Ella, the youngest sister, the light-skinned sister, she really feels that because of the way lighter-skinned white people are treated during that time, during the late 60s, that she can really make her life better by just trying to be white. She's essentially, during that time, it was a more common thing for African Americans to pass. It wasn't a taboo thing. It was like, if you were light enough to pass, then yeah, that's something that a lot of African Americans would try and do during that time, because it would simply mean an easier time for you. You know, you wouldn't be treated like a second class citizen.
That's right.
Yeah, society tells her that white is better. You know, that's really it. She wouldn't have made that decision if it had been shown that she could benefit from it. So she wants to just get whatever she wanted, and she wants to change her identity. So that's really a big, big element of what our film revolves around, is colorism, and, you know, then racial identity, and obviously bullying as well. There's so many themes, but, you know, colorism is one of the main ones that that influenced us, that pushes the story forward.
Color, I think at that time, color is equated to privilege. So
right.
If she passed for white, she could get what she wanted, privilege. She could go where she wanted. She could walk in the front door of a shop. She didn't have to go in the back. She could go into the white bathroom where they had like better toilet paper, like sudsy soap, and, you know, things like that. There were privilege that came with lighter skin color, and all she had to do, like, she had it within her power, just by the, like, a freak of nature, she came out whiter, you know, and she had it. She could just make that choice. Her sister didn't necessarily have that option, you know? And that's where I think the fact that Ella had this choice, and that's the choice that she made, and it's the choice that she has to live with, you know? Like, and a climate like that with Freedom Riders and like all the political change, like the Black is Beautiful campaign had already started, but she'd still had that idea. Like, the paper bag test came out in the early 1900s, you know? Like, the idea of lightness being better had been perpetuated for like hundreds of years already, and it was just like one decision that she lived with for a very long time.
Wow, and it's amazing, because if you think about it historically, with a lot of the issues that you know, people of color dealt with. And there was another, the biggest thing, too, also when we were looking at colorism, is that the people who were fair-skinned, who were light enough to pass for white, it was an issue where white people would not accept them 100%, and black people did not want to accept them because of the fact that they were, you know, they had a mixed heritage. So they were like that middle group, you know, they labeled like the mulattoes, and they considered them like the buffer class. But what's so amazing is that in your film, the way you bring all of this to light, and it's done in such an elegant, very classy way, until when here's the thing, because Dr. John Kim can tell you, I'm like the biggest critic in this world. When you're reading the script, I'm telling you, it draws you in, and you can like almost see this in your mind as to how it's actually playing out. And I think what it's going to do for so many people is that it's going to, especially, you know, there's a scene in there where the incident happens, where they, which causes a rift between them. That scene alone, that is going to, I think, be the stop and think and examine and reevaluate yourself. And for a lot of people, it really is. And because it says to you, okay, I'm doing A, B, C, or D against my own flesh and blood, because I want to have a what I consider is going to be a privileged life for me. So at that point in time, I guess to her it was worth the risk to do it, not realizing the outcome. And we see this happening every day right now with colorism issues. And people don't want to talk about colorism, and that's the problem why it continues to exist. Dr. Mitch Wilson, who's one of the co-authors of The Color Complex, she was a guest on the show last year, and she noted that, you know, it's like the dirty secret. You don't want to talk about it. So many people would pass, and they pass, families are destroyed, and for them, life would just go on. But the way the film brings this to light, it is just so, I'm like, wow, this is what we really need to see. And here's another issue, guys. We, you know, if I see another movie about slavery, I'm going to start drinking, and I don't drink. I'm serious. They just drive me insane. We need to see films that are saying, that are addressing issues that are people in society are dealing with in a real-time event. We need to see an issue like colorism in films, because if you think about it, and maybe I'm wrong, and I think I've done a lot of research on colorism, I don't think there's really a modern-day movie or film out there on colorism. And
well, the same covered it a couple of years ago. They covered elements of it. But ours is a very distinctly different story, because ours was like young sisters, and it was within that family. And like,
I have my own reservations about the human stain. I don't think they casted that very well, but, you know.
No, they did.
The
human stain, that's a whole other discussion, right? I wasn't thrilled with the way that went. They didn't. Let me put it this way. With colorism affecting children, and that's one of the biggest issues that we're seeing now. I can give you an example. A colleague of mine had told me this heartbreaking tale about a little dark-skinned black girl who was in her class who kept scratching her leg. And the little girl continued to scratch her leg until the skin turned like an ashy white color. So she asked her, she said, is your leg itching? She said, no. And she said, well, do you want some lotion to put on your leg? And she said, no. So at this point, I think she's getting a little frustrated. So she said to her, well, why do you keep scratching your leg? And the little girl said, because when I do, it doesn't look black. And that alone, that one issue, I've gone out and given presentations and talked to like a lot of parents and young girls about, you know, colorism and standards of beauty. And it was heartbreaking to hear so many little girls of color think that being light-skinned and having the long, silky, straight hair and light eyes was better than having darker skin. So in other words, they were embracing Eurocentric standards of beauty as opposed to Afrocentric. But the reason why they do this is because the media sends a message out to everyone. It says light skin, or white skin, or skin in close proximity to whiteness is better than dark skin. And we see this even now on television. You see it in films, on shows on television. You just see it in magazines. And you were never seeing, up until recently, when Lupita, the girl Lupita was in the movie, some other movie, gave this big thing about her being dark-skinned. Now she always hated her dark skin and all this other stuff. We don't ever need to see another Lupita, another girl, rather, at Lupita's age saying that. And this is why your film is so important, because your film can capture this for a young girl now, and she can realize the issues, and as she grows and matures into a woman, she won't be Lupita's age hating her skin color. So that's why I think it's, your film is so crucial for young people to see. I think it's crucial also for the teenage girls to, and boys as well, to see the film, as well as older women and men, because each age group that I've just focused in on can truly benefit from your film, and that's why it's so important. Dr. Jung Kim, what is your take on that?
Oh, yeah. I think Dr. Colebrook is really one to, she's real. But in my year of knowing her, she really has not liked a lot of things. So definitely when she called me the other day and said, you know what, you got to look at this. I just got off the phone. They made this film. You got to look at this. They need to be on the radio show. And I was like, oh. I mean, I was with my kids because they're getting ready for school. They start tomorrow. But I dropped everything, and I sat down, and I listened, because for Dr. Colbert to say this is worth looking at, and if they're actually addressing colorism correctly, or race issue correctly, that's enough for me to pique my interest and sit down and listen. And, you know, when I read over the script and even went on your website, it was everything that Dr. Colbert said it was. I think as much as you both have a great extensive background, I think that this film's really going to launch you even further. And I can't wait to view it. I'm just glad that I hope the whole world remembers that you were on our show, that we are interviewing you guys.
We're going to make sure of that. You're the first one.
Don't forget about us.
Never.
You know what I think is interesting about the film too is like why did Ella really want to pass the white? Was it because she just wanted to have that better quality life? Is that why she wanted to pass?
Well, I'm kind of hesitant to answer that question because I think it's going to be different for a lot of different people. It's one of those things where like from the folks who have read the script early on, it's like everyone's kind of latched on to that particular, ironically enough, that particular decision for their own reasons. It's like Ella was young. She was a lot more impressionable. Ella's father and his actions and what he did in the film and the script could have influenced that as well. And again, just in the makeup of the time, the fire that was going on at the time, just like all the bigotry, all the hate, all the racism, like that was an issue. That was something that could have influenced her. So that's one of the things, like, why did she choose to do it? Like, we really want to leave that up to the viewer. Like, and again, that's something else to add to the discussion that you can kind of either say or not say, like, why did she choose to do it? Everyone has their own different reasons.
Even in writing this, like, I think because Michael and I come from very different backgrounds, even in writing this, we would discuss all these issues. We would discuss, really, would she be this way or would she be that way? Because we have different backgrounds. And I feel like that's what made, for us, that's what made our script come together better. You know, because, our diversity just made it better, you know? And I think that, in everything that you do, like, the more perspectives that you can bring into it, the more diversity, the more cultures, the more ideas that you can bring into it, the more real you can make it. Because our world that we walk out onto the street on every day is very diverse. I walk out on the street, and there's, like, 50 different colors right in front of me. And, like, everyone comes from different places, and that's my world. So, like, when we write, when we do anything, when we produce things, we tend to do it with many cultures and many backgrounds and many different perspectives all wrapped into it. And we think that makes better film.
Definitely.
It does. You know, it does. And it makes for a better society because Dr. Jung Kim and I are like big advocates on racial unity, embracing diversity. That's like our biggest thing. We're big on that. And I've had a lot of black people actually say to me, and a lot of those in academia who wouldn't associate with me because of the fact that I'm talking about colorism and the reason why we must stop it, and we must talk about racial unity and more diversity, because like Dr. Jung Kim is Asian, I'm a Black American female, and people were shocked that she and I were partners, like your business partners. Dr. Jung Kim, didn't they inform people, like, totally shocked?
Yeah, and actually, I think, you know, we both heard some people of our own race saying, are you sure that's smart? Like, can you trust someone of that race?
Yeah.
Because you know what they did to us, the L.A. riots. You know?
Yeah.
So I think it is really odd for you guys. You know, I think you are taking, I mean, as much as I can tell you, Michael and Kimberly, that you get along, I think the fact that, you know, you're of two different races coming together.
I think we're a lot like you two. It's like you bring your own special mix to you guys' relationship.
Right.
And me and Kim, we work in tandem like that as well. Like, I have my strong suits. Kim has her strong suits, but, you know, they complement each other. Definitely.
Yes, that's exactly what Dr. Jung Kim and I do. We complement each other, and it's so funny because it could be late at night, 11:30, and I know she has to get the kids to bed. And I'm like, oh my God, an idea! And I'll pick up the phone and call her, and I'm like, are you busy? I'm getting ready to get the kids off, but go ahead. We'll say, okay, only 5 minutes. We end up talking an hour to 2 hours. And it's funny because, you know, we do this so much, it's hilarious. And it's because we complement each other and we both bring such good perspectives from a diversity side to the mix. And that's what I see what you guys have done here. So all I can say to you guys is that I love what you're doing. I love your style. I am impressed. And I was thinking the other day, you know, just when I finished this script, because you guys are making me nuts with this script, so you have to hurry up and get this film out there, because I said, wow, this film is going to be something, because we have with I Am Beautiful, we have a big, huge community thing going, and I said, wow, this would be great to have girls watch this script and then have them answer the question, what would you do if you were Ella, what would you have done? So that is an excellent
question.
Yeah, that's going to be an excellent lesson plan for, and what I think, because Dr. Jung Kim and I are pushing for schools to include more of a diversity type of curriculum, talk more about history, more about colorism issues, because I think if we start at a young age, it'll make a difference with kids. And I also believe that when I finished reading it, I said, oh my gosh, I could see myself right now showing this film, finishing the film, having a dialogue with young people, and then having them answer that question for me. So, I mean, even...
That's exactly what we want.
Yeah, and
that
then not
exactly
only that...
That is exactly what we want.
Yeah, you know, for the... And see, and I keep looking things from little girls because I'm so concerned how little girls are suffering about the skin color issues and self-esteem. But there are older women as well who can watch this film and their sister circles or their support groups. Women of color can say, you know, okay, let's watch this film. And when they finish the film, then they can say from a perspective of looking at Tara and Ella as the older women, how would you react to each other now after all of these years?
Yes.
And so the conversation piece is there in every possible age group, every possible way you can think of. It's there. So what you have done is that this is a masterpiece because it's going to start and spark conversations across the map that need to, you know, be held. That's just the bottom line. So when people look at this film, when they, you know, they're going to walk away. And what I would love to do is have like a discussion panel and actually talk about how everybody felt and the decisions that were made and how they would have reacted. And I guarantee you guys, and I'm willing to bet you, that it's going to open up that dialogue. And you're going to start seeing people blogging about your film. They're going to start talking about it. And it's going to, and you'll see how when people post blogs, you know, everybody can go in there and post a response to them, which I don't like, but they do it. I think it's going to be great because that's going to start a dialogue. And you're going to see people and individuals, like just friends having conversations. You're going to see social groups. I'm hoping that something, especially you'll see more community groups and especially churches, you know, have the people, their members view this film and use it as a tool to help people learn about how detrimental colorism really is and how it can destroy lives.
That would be amazing.
I think that's what both me and Kim really wanted at the end of the day for this film.
We've already made a few contacts in a school that has a really good diversity program. Like, we definitely want to get into schools. We definitely want to talk to young people so that they understand, I mean, they can understand where colorism came from, and they can understand, like, what colorism is, you know, and, like, and all of these issues that surround it, and hopefully not react, but be proactive, you know, like,
right.
be a bit more firm in who they are and, like, be understanding of who they are. And more accepting. Like, we want to get into schools. We've got some contacts overseas that are interested in screening us. Like, we've had such an incredible response. Like, we haven't even made the film yet. But, like, the...
Wow.
I mean, the response has been so, so encouraging, you know, like...
Very motivating. I cannot wait to shoot this film.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Look, listen, yeah, I can't... Listen, I can't wait for you guys to shoot this film. So, tell us... well, Dr. John Kim's going to cover that about the how you're actually going about getting this done. How are you funding this? Because this is going to be like, you know, how are you doing this?
Well, we have a Seed and Spark campaign. We're crowdfunding right now. It's on seedandspark.com, and it's we're trying to raise $20,000. We raised like 62% in 1 week. It was insane. Like, it was absolutely insane. So we're still trying to reach out further, like reach outside of our network, trying to make contact with organizations like yours and like with schools that would be interested. And we've got some international organizations that are trying to reach out to their people as well. Like, people are reading, like, they're reading the story, they're watching the video, and they're responding, and like the word is spreading, but it takes a long time. And we've just got to raise the money. Like, independent film is funded by the people, you know? Like, we as the people, we use our hard-earned money and we use our votes to make decisions in our lives, you know? And Hollywood doesn't traditionally make very colorful films like this. They don't, because Hollywood's a business, and we understand that, you know? But, like, we respect that, but, like, we want to make films, and we believe that there is a market for our films. We believe that, like, colorful films, like, people want to watch colorful films. So
trust me,
we
do.
Yeah. So we're calling on the people to come and support us and help us raise that money so that we're planning on shooting in Georgia in October. We've got the city of Arlington really, like, they're backing us all the way.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful people in Arlington.
Like, Tammy Fincher.
Thank you so much. Like, this film could not have been possible with Tammy and just everybody in Arlington. When we sent them the script and we told them the story, they were just like, yes, we're on board, whatever you need.
They pulled out all the stops.
All the
stops. They are,
yeah,
like...
It's literally a godsend, honestly.
Yeah.
Now,
so,
let me ask
like,
you this.
Ready.
Is there a deadline? Is there a deadline by which the crowdfunding...
We have 15 more days left in our crowdfunding campaign. I think our ending date, if I'm doing my math right, is September 10th to get all our donations in. So, if anyone's trying to do anything, it just has to be within the next 15 days, and you can help us make this little change that we hope to go forth and just start this dialogue. That's really what we want to do. And you know, Kim and I were both heavily invested in this project as well. Like I said, when we started, we really want to make this film. We believe it's something that can actually just stand the test of time, and like you said, just start the dialogue. That's really what we want to do, is just start a dialogue.
And everyone who's involved in the film also feels the same way. Like, all of our crew.
Our beautiful crew.
They're, like, these crew, they get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of money. And they're traveling down to Georgia to be with us for a week because they believe in the power of film. They believe in the story that we have to tell. And, like, they want to be a part of it. Like, the support that we've gotten from the cast as well. Oh, my goodness, the cast. Like, we've got people traveling in to be a part of this. Like, it's just been astounding. We're so blessed. We're very, very blessed. And we just have this one little hurdle, 15 days.
It seems that you need money to do things. Who knew? But, unfortunately, you know.
Where are you now?
Where are we now?
I mean, how much have you raised so far?
Our goal for crowdfunding is $20,000, and that's mostly to facilitate logistics, crew, housing, and feeding them. But we're 64%. We've raised about $13,000. We're actually $20 shy of 13K at the moment. If anyone's got 20 bucks, they're not using and want to push us over the edge of 13 grand tonight, we'd be much obliged.
Well, I think Dr. John Kim and I could muster up something here.
A couple of coins, nothing too crazy. Just two mixed Starbucks coffees.
What is that website that it's on? What is the actual web address?
We've got a. It's on Seed and Spark, but you can go to our URL. It forwards straight to our Seed and Spark campaign, and that's AcrossTheTracksFilm. That's .com. We just had that up, and it'll go straight to our campaign. So that's AcrossTheTracksFilm.com, and it'll take you right to our Seed and Spark campaign. And we also have to thank Seed and Spark because we told them about this story very early on, and they themselves, the owners of this company, you know, we were able to actually meet with them in person and like have a discussion about this film when it was still in its infancy. And they were just like, yes, whatever you need. So Seed and Spark has definitely been a huge supporter as far as like blasting the word out there, them putting it on their social media network. So again, like everyone we told this film to, we brought it to, has in some way or shape supported it in the capacity that they can. So that, for me and Kim, that's just proof that, you know, you guys want to see this film. However, whatever help you can give us, we will be hugely thankful for. We promise you it will not go to waste. Like, we're going to make this film, and it's going to be amazing. We promise you that.
So our listeners, our fan base, we're asking you to please come out and support Ms. James and Mr. Cook, because Across the Tracks is a film that we must get going. We have to be able to sit down and view it, and you can go to it, seedandspark.com, AcrossTheTracks. I'm on the website right now, and if you also go to the Colorism Project's webpage, there's a page there that's dedicated just for the film, and it says Across the Tracks. So if you click that link, it'll take you to a page for them, and then you click the links on there. Well, you can support the film, or support Across the Tracks. If you click it, it'll take you right to Seed and Spark, and you can help sponsor this, because this is something that we really need to see, actually sit down and be able to see the film. So listeners, pull out your wallets, your little plastic cards, and let's get this going, and let's show the love and support. Because one thing that's so important in our communities is that we must learn to support each other and help each other reach higher ground in life. And it's so important because the film, number one, is going to work wonders for people. Number two, we're just ecstatic about Ms. James and Mr. Cook's accomplishments in putting this together. And it's something that is so needed. Dr. John Kim, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely feel like, you know, especially having children of my own, I have a young 10-year-old daughter, and, you know, films these days and TV shows these days, there's just not quality. And it's just so delightful to see that, you know, a film like this has been made, that it's definitely, I plan on seeing it with my daughter. And, you know, especially since she's full Asian, but she does have, like, we've had many discussions. She's a model, she's an actress, but she does have skin color issues. And I know a lot of other, you know, girls of different races have skin color issues where they really feel like they would be more beautiful if their skin was just a little lighter. And so I think this would be a positive film. Even though it shows Ella and Tara, like, when they're older, I would even love to see just a Disney show like this with two young girls, two sisters, you know, two girls of color, just going through these kind of issues in real society. And how do they deal with it? So I think that this is just a stepping stone to something more positive that
we can only hope.
I told you guys, HBO miniseries.
Like I said, if anyone's HBO's listening, we've got things already drafted up. Let's get a meeting going.
You guys want to know something? I can envision how their lives are when the film starts, And then when they get into their teenage years and then they, you know, get into their 20s, and then I would love to see these two characters, because we've never seen anything like this. These two characters go from being kids all the way to, like, their 50s. I think it would be awesome. And, you know, like Dr. John Kim said, this is the start of something that can be so huge. And that's why it's so important that the film get funded 100%, because it can open doors and lead to God knows what. So listeners, get out there and let's support them. And some of the other issues, the reason why I found the film to be so important, and the reason why we have to make sure that it actually gets filmed and that you reach your goal, is because, number one, the film is going to really make you think critically about the complexities of race and color in this country. The characters will touch your heart. The two sisters will be who are torn apart by the desire of one sister, you know, to be white, so she changed her racial identity. You know, this will make you question how you value and embrace and represent your racial pride, your culture, and your ethnicity. I think it speaks volumes, especially with mixed race. Am I correct, Dr. Jung Kim?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm teaching it. I can't help thinking, like, I know you guys are making this film in October, but I'm in the process right now of developing a mixed race class, and I'm trying to bring in different films, and I can't. You know, I know there's that one, definitely one of the films I'm bringing in is, the Indian film called Mississippi. It's not coming to my mind, but I wish there was a film like this that I could show to my class and then have a deeper discussion, because it covers everything, race issues, mixed race issues, colorism. So I love that this is the start of it, and it's a smart film where the characters are well-developed. So I guess my thing is, I read the script, I looked at Ella and Tara, and what's going to happen if people want more? Because I want more.
I want Tara, more, too.
I want more Ella. You know, or I want different stories that are similar to that. I want more. So what do you plan on doing? Like, do you have something else in mind that you are in the works of developing? Or are you just too tired because you're thinking about this film?
We are quite focused on this. Like, it's pretty much a full-time job. Like, Michael and I, like, I stopped accepting work, and I, like, for I think probably about 2 or 3 months I'm going to be doing this full-time, and it's like, this is financially, it's a big undertaking for us, you know, so that's why it's really important, like we're putting everything we got on the table for this, you know. But we do, I mean, because of the working relationship that we have, like, we do think that films like this are important. Films like, just like diverse films and films that are issues based and have like are thought provoking and like create discussion. These are really important things. Like, we've discussed it. Like,
we didn't want to look back on this film at the end of the day and realize we could have done more. So that's why, you know, we're gonna take this time out of our lives and just put everything we have into it, just to kind of say it. All right, we did our best, and here it is. So.
We do have some other films that we have ideas about, but we haven't written them yet. I think when we're posting the film, then we'll sit down and like maybe take a weekend and write some stuff.
Normally this question is asked after we've shot this film, or after we can actually have something else on the pipeline. But no, we have played with that thought. You know, Kim and I do have tons of ideas, and I know Kim has written some other stuff for follow-up pieces, and obviously with this type of film, you know, mostly what everyone's with, the commercial viability of it is just like, okay, is there a feature involved? Like, I want to say that's half of the questions that we have, like, out of this short, is there a feature that could come of it? And I think just from the conversations we've had, it's like, not only could a feature come from this, but an HBO miniseries, a Disney series, like, tons of content that is revolved around what we are talking about could stem from this project. So, yes, to everyone out there listening, it's like, we do have many ideas on how to keep this going, tons of ideas on how to make this a commercially viable piece and also speak volumes and, you know, I don't know, hopefully change the way a lot of people think about colorism.
But we have to get through this one first.
Yes,
The important thing is, the important thing, and one of the reasons that we want to reach out to you guys is, like, we must have an audience for the film. You know, if no one watches it, we won't make another one. you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's important for other people to see that this is a success. And so it's important for, I mean, not only, obviously, like, not only we're funding now, and that's important, but once we make it, people have to see it. They have to go to theaters and see it. And it's not just our film. Like, other films of color and other issue-based films, like, we have to support those films as an industry.
This
we have to buy tickets to see these movies.
This is the time, guys. It's like, if there's a film that you like or even think you like most recent one I would say is, like, that needed everyone's support was Belle. The film that came out earlier with I'm gonna butcher her last name. Please help with it. Gugu. Hopefully someone else can fill that in for me. But like films like those that are very they can fly under the radar if they're not supported by people, because at the end of the day, Hollywood is a business. You know, there's a reason. Unfortunate, sad to say that the most latest installment of a Ridley Scott's piece, Exodus: Gods and Kings, has essentially been casted with all white characters. Because that's what Hollywood has seen as marketable. They can push that to the farthest corners of the earth, and a lot of people will buy it. You know, not even considering the fact that those stories were actually Egyptian people, Africans.
That's
and
right.
They just completely took this film and changed it to their own liking, casting Christian Bale, Sigourney Weaver, Josh Edgerton. Again, fantastic, excellent actors, but if it's getting to that point to where a giant, super, mega director can essentially put out a film that has been a story that's been whitewashed, something's got to stop. We got to do something, or we're gonna end up being written off the screen.
I'm gonna tell you something interesting. You made a good point. We did a show a couple of weeks ago where we were looking at the sitcoms for the fall on ABC, and I was horrified because there was. Each of the sitcoms that are coming out, they're very stereotypical about people of color. And the problem is that they believe that they're bringing in diversity by having an Asian family, having a Latino family, and a black family, but they're insulting, highly insulting. And Dr. Jung Kim and I talked about this on the sitcoms and stereotypes, but the stereotypes they're presenting were just not acceptable. And they're whitewashed also. With the stereotypical views. But not only that, if you look at Hollywood and you look at the big screens, you know, I agree with you 100%, Mr. Cook. We need to see more films that are colorful. And I don't want to see a film with all white people in it. I don't want to see a film with all black people in it. I want to see a diverse group of people in the film.
I definitely do, yes.
And we need a Shondaland.
Exactly. And I think what we need to look at is that we need to see more films like this. We need to see films that tell a story, that deal with issues that we're dealing with in society today, right now, at this minute. And I'm so tired of looking at even movies on television where I'm so sick of the Criminal Mind movies. I'm sick of somebody getting murdered. I'm sick of somebody getting shot. I'm sick of the drug scene. You want to see something, you want to sit down that's going to be meaningful, you know, something that's going to make you smile. And this is what A Course of Tracks does. So it's important for so many reasons, and most importantly for, you guys know me, I'm going back to the girls of color, because girls of color are dealing with so many issues, like now in the millennium, where a lot of them are wanting to change their skin color to be lighter. We're dealing with issues where girls over in Africa and India and here in the United States, they're bleaching their skin to make their skin lighter, to be accepted. You see a lot of people who are famous who bleach their skin to make it lighter because, again, it goes back to that ideal that light skin or white skin privilege, or the lighter your skin is, they're considered to be more attractive or more appealing or more acceptable. So we have to break that cycle, that mentality, get girls to embrace the fact that, you know, the European, Eurocentric, rather, standards of beauty are not standards that girls of color need to measure themselves by, because they will never, ever be able to meet those standards. And because they don't, this is why we start seeing them make bad choices. The self-esteem, identity, respect, and pride, they start to suffer. So in your film, it's bringing the reality of these skin color issues to the table, and that's why it's so important for me, for young girls, to look at this and see exactly how that the skin color issue and that era affected their relationship in a modern time.
Yeah,
I think
Go on. Well, I was just going to add, like, especially in society, I mean, you see in India, and my students love when I bring this up, but in India, like, you know, girls
are really taught or encouraged to have lighter skin, to the point that, you know, some of their ads now only have, like, skin bleaching creams or face washes, but it's now to the extent of face washing your private area. And the commercials even show, like, clips where the woman is sitting there, she obviously has dull skin, and then her boyfriend or husband totally ignores her, so she decides to then go do her body wash or to clean herself down there, and then she'll come back and suddenly he's smiling, he twirls her around, he loves her. And it kind of sends a message that unless your skin is white, but even your private parts are white, you know, you aren't worth loving. And I hate that message, because it is something that girls of color really feel like that is true. Like, I, because of my skin color, whether it's dark or light, that determines my self-worth. And you know, I want girls, we all want girls, we want girls of color to realize that, yes, you may have a certain skin color, but you're more than skin color. Like, you are a person that has personality, that has sparkle, that has a brain. And that's why I love, like, that your film, like, you show two sisters, different skin colors, but they're real round characters with personalities, with feelings, you know, they're not flat. And a lot of times in films or in stories, they'll show the one person who, you know, the one person with maybe darker skin who's like the angry one or the flat one, you know, not well-developed characters. But I love it to develop both of them. And like I said earlier, you want to side with one, you feel like you need to side with one, but then because of the way that you develop the characters of the two sisters, you can't side with them. You can see both aspects of what they're going through, and you can't choose sides. You love both of them, and you want to just help them, and you want them to have that relationship. And so that's, for me, it was like that conflict. I like Tara. I like Ella. I feel like I should choose one, but I like both of them. I like the way that you developed it. So, yeah, it's definitely a film that will really bring out a lot of emotion for people, but also make people think, you know. And so I'm just so thankful for both of you for making this film.
Yes, same here. Thankful because it's needed. And what's really great about it is that it's addressing, it clearly identifies a lot of the societal ills that we still see society being plagued by, even in the millennium. You know, again, the problem of race and color lines. So many people have been hurt, so many lives have been destroyed, and dreams have been deferred, and even love has been lost. And the film addresses these, all of the above, and the fact that, you know, you're looking at the relationship issue, where Ella was so interested in someone being, you know, interested in her to take her out somewhere, to the soda shop or whatever. It goes back to that old a piece that was posted by a mental health care counselor, Tori, I think his name is Richards, in which he talks about how a darker-skinned black girl wanted to go with a white guy or a white-skinned guy because she wanted a white-skinned baby. So, and he talks about this in one of his posts on his blog. So we're seeing that, and we're seeing how it's that belief that the light skin is so much better than darker skin. It addresses the family, sibling issues, how families have been and continue to be divided by colorism, issues denying ancestry, racial identity issues, mixed race families. From a psychological standpoint, the film is also going to address the fact of how girls of color really see or view themselves sometimes when they're dealing with self-esteem or self-love issues. So it's really interesting. Socially, you know, it covers that light skin, dark skin dynamic, like I mentioned earlier about those contests and competitions and everything. So it's important because it brings to light all of the issues that I just mentioned, and it does it in one film. And normally, you guys, to see all of these issues, these colorism and race issues dealt with in one film, that's what makes the difference, and that's what pushes you over the top. So I think you did a great job. Love the script. Can't wait to see it.
We can't either.
we can't wait to film it.
So once again, I think that you guys have done a phenomenal job. And my one question I did want to ask you also, was it really difficult trying to cast the sisters as they were children? Was that hard to do, to get them to have that right?
I think it was more daunting than difficult.
We knew going into it that it would be a challenge, and, you know, we definitely wanted to make sure we took the time and found the right talent and the actresses who could not only perform but understand the role. Like, it's not an easy. I'm sure you saw from your reading of the script, like, it's not an easy. These characters aren't easy to grasp. So a lot of, like, our actresses need to, in some sense, understand what they're going through, like, understand colorism. As you know, it's very sense to just have that, you know, ability to act out what we're asking them to do. So I agree with Kim. It was more daunting than hard. Like, we knew we would find someone, but it was just like sifting through that and finding them would be the daunting task.
Wow, that's amazing.
But we found excellent, excellent cast. I kind of wish we could release the, I would never, but the auditions were just so amazing.
Yeah.
So amazing. So we're excited to work with them. They were, like, they just got it spot on, you know?
That's awesome. See, I think that what's good, the beauty of your film also is the fact that you're able to find the right characters to fit perfectly, the right people to fill, you know, the character roles. That's so important. And I can just tell you, when I looked at the picture that you have on the site of Ella, and I'm like, wow, she looks like Ella. You know, it's like how you look and you think about it in your mind. And I'm like, wow, you know, that's Ella. And it was so amazing because after that, I kept imagining, like, wow, wonder what they would have been like at 14 and 15 or when they hit 21. And there's an issue.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago,
Ella and our young Tara, they're such powerful, like, actresses. Like, they are going to floor you guys. This film will be great with them, but I'm very excited to see what they do with their careers after this. Like, they're just, like, Bren Berkley, if you guys are listening, you're phenomenal actresses. We're so, so thankful to be working with you guys. But, yeah, they're going to rock your emotions, all the cast. But the ones we've released so far, it's like Bren and Berkley. But, yeah.
Hold one second. We have a caller. One second, gang. Hi, you're live in the air.
Guess not.
Oh, no, I think they're still there. Hello? Hi, you're live in the air. Do you have a question?
It wasn't necessarily a question. I was speaking with Michael the other day. This is Gray, by the way. Gray Luna. I was speaking with Michael.
Oh, hey, what's going on?
Doing good. I was speaking with Michael about why I wanted to invest in the film, not simply because of the storyline, but more so because I'm a black person and he's a black person that helped co-write it. It's like giving back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the solutions I was saying that we need to be within film trying to push for, like, push for solutions, push for things that have happened to us over and over again when history repeats itself, push for the solution, you know?
You're right. So, I agree with you. 100%.
A lot of times we talk about everything that we're so sick of. I'm so sick of every time I see a black woman in her first film, she has to be somebody ghetto. She has to be the waitress that you have to put up with the loud mouth. She has to be having sex with a white man. She has to be all these things. But
yeah, you're right.
You know, instead of talking about what we hate, and or even in movies where we're showing something that is definitely true, definitely something that we see from our perspective on a daily, we have to, instead of only pushing what we went through and the bravery that other people had to do for us to get here, let's think about the future. Let's think about what do we need to do to stop this.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're right. You're so right because you hit the nail right on the head because when you do see black women portrayed in films, and I mean, I'll be honest with you guys, I don't go to movie theaters. I do not go for that very reason, and I don't even watch television. I watch, like, the news, MSNBC, but for that very reason, I guess I could say I'm just turned off, and that's why I found this film to be so exciting. I'm like, wow, because, like you noted, we're always portrayed in negative light, and I'm so tired of seeing that. We're more than that. And I think what this film is saying, it sends a message loud and clear. And I think they've done a phenomenal job with this.
Thank you. I read an article recently by, it was written about Robert Rodriguez, and they were asking why he created his channel, El Rey. It's a cable channel that he just started up. And he noted that when he was making Spy Kids, he was originally asked why he was making the family Hispanic. Why didn't you make them American? And he was like, well, they are American. They're just Latino American, you know? Like, and he pushed because of his heritage. He wrote about his family. He wrote his family into the script. And, like, because it was important to him, he pushed for that to happen. And as a result, he said for years after the success of that film, Latino families would come up to him and say, thank you for making that because you changed the dreams of my kids. They all of a sudden saw other Hispanic kids like them on the screen, and they were spy kids, and they were cool, and they said, I could do that. I could be a president. I could do this, and, like, it changed their dreams. And that's where I feel like the power of film can come in. I don't feel like film is so, like, I don't think it changes the world, but it can change people's ideas of the world, and those ideas can make amazing things happen, and that's what we want to do.
Exactly.
That's what I think a lot of filmmakers would like to do.
I think you've done it. Gay, did you want to add anything else?
Nope. Not much. I was just going to say that there is a huge power that film has had. You know, movies made their biggest boom when the Great Depression hit, right? It was like people didn't have a lot of money, but they spent their money on these movies because it gave them hope. And that was a strong history behind it. You know, I think that film today did the same thing. And I feel like, yeah, definitely I would put my money toward this. And any other projects that are going to, you know, I haven't read the, you know, I've not read the script or anything like that, but it's just like.
That's coming soon, Jerry, I promise. We've been busy, but I got you. No worries.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm not going to see the movie for a while. I figure it's going to take a while for it to come out. But I'm definitely going to put my money toward it. And I feel like it's definitely going to be one of those films that start this snowball effect. You know what I'm saying?
I think it will, too.
Yeah.
I was telling them this has to go into an HBO miniseries. They think I'm playing, but I'm serious.
Yeah, I think it'll be a sold out. I think you were talking about the different actresses and actors and how you're excited to see what's going to come of them after this film. I'm excited to see what's going to become of everybody. You know, I'm excited to see, you know, everything about, you know, just everything you touch is gold, you know. Like, what about this radio show, how it might get some more views simply because you were on the show? Talk about this film that you know, it's a very inspiring thing. That's why I'm putting money into it.
You know,
the future
thank you,
is very exciting.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't even think about the radio show getting more listeners. Hey, thank you, Jerry. I didn't think about that.
I love the fact that you guys have played this show during the VMAs. I think that was brilliant.
Wow. Thank you.
You know, that's brilliant. Whether you thought about it or not, I think that's brilliant.
Thank you. I mean, you know, sometimes you don't even think about that. It's just we were so excited, and I believe in making sure that you embrace and you help everyone along the way, because as we go along on this journey, you find something that fits into your beliefs, your values, what you stand for. And when I read this script, well, first my first conversation with Ms. James, her personality just won me over instantly. She sent me an email and her personality instant. It was like we clicked.
Oh, I loved our first talk. I was so inspired.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is cool. And then, like, when I started reading the script, I'm saying, wow, this is so inspiring. Dr. Jung Kim could tell you I have a hectic schedule, and I was in such a funk this week. And it just took me out of my little moody mood that I was in. And I'm like, wow, I was pumped up and excited. And it made me actually get back into working on my projects and books that we're writing. So I just think what they've done is phenomenal.
Thank you. Like, you give me such a great opportunity to be on this show. Like, we're so honored.
Yeah, and our lines are we're at full capacity tonight too. So listeners, I just got like three nasty emailgrams that they can't get online, but we're at capacity, guys. I'm sorry about that, but what you can do.
I was going to go ahead and say that that was the last of what I had to say. I can go ahead and get off.
Okay. Yes. Thank you so much,
Gary. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
We'll
thanks, Gary.
Thanks for your support.
Oh yeah.
Bye. Okay. Yeah. Bye. Whoops. Okay. The things, guys, I want to let you know as listeners is that we're at full capacity. I apologize for that, but in a sense, it's a good thing. But you can listen. You can still listen in live through the link. The show is also archived. So once we go off the air tonight, I will send Ms. James and Mr. Cook a link to the show that they can place on any website. You can also go into iTunes. Our show is also archived in iTunes, and you can listen to it in iTunes. You can go back to the blog radio, Dynamics of Colorism Talk Radio site, and listen to the archive. So this archive will be around forever. So feel free to listen in that way. And I do apologize for those of you who can't dial in to listen because we're at full capacity. But I thank you for calling, for trying to listen in. Getting back to our film, guys, again, let's go over so our listeners are aware of how they can support the film. Ms. James and Mr. Cook, you want to give us that before we end so listeners will be able to go directly to your site? And if they need to contact you, how can they contact you?
Again, it's everything that you need to know is at our URL. It's acrossthetracksfilm.com. It goes directly to our Seed and Spark. And on there you can find us on Facebook at Across the Tracks Film. And on Twitter at ATT Film. I actually think you have tweeted at us a couple of times. So if you go down your timeline, I'm sure you'll find a way to find us there. And I'm sure through our email address is definitely everywhere on this, I'm pretty sure. It's not hard to get in touch with us, like tons of people have, and we made it easy for you guys. If you want to send us an email or, you know, donate, we make sure that you can actually do that.
But it's acrossthetracksfilm.com. Just go there. You got everything there.
Everything you need.
Wow, awesome. Okay, great. I want to thank you guys so much. Dr. Jung Kim, do you want to add anything before we end for the evening?
No, I think I've said everything, and I just, you know, please keep us informed, Dr. Kolbers and I, so that we can announce it on Twitter and Facebook and other social media when you're ready to tell us, like, the launch date for this film, because I'm sure all our listeners and followers will want to go and watch it. So we're
of
here
course.
To support
we
you.
Love
please
that.
Continue to tell us what you may need to really launch this movie, because it's going to be absolutely wonderful.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we will definitely, we will be in close contact.
Of course.
Yep, and you have our support 100%, and we just can't wait to see this come out. And I thank you both for your time for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, this has just been an excellent conversation, and listeners, so that you know that we'll have them, Ms. James and Mr. Cook, come back on and give us periodic updates so we know what's going on. And when they actually finish shooting, we're going to have them come back and want to talk all about it again. So, well, we're building a network, a good relationship here, and we look forward to working with you guys and supporting you as much as we can.
Thank you so much.
It means the world to us.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And listeners, we're going to end tonight, but we want to thank all of you for tuning in for this special show, and we look forward to you tuning in this Thursday when my guest will be Mr. Martin L. Davis, who's the author of Are We There Yet? The Ultimate Challenge. So once again, listeners, it's been a pleasure. Ms. James and Mr. Cook and Dr. John Kim, I thank you all. This has been an outstanding, it was like a great conversation.
Definitely.
About a masterpiece. So we look forward to you, getting it out there. Listeners, please support Across the Tracks. And again, you can go to their website. If you forget the website, go to thecolorismproject.com. It has a page there for Across the Tracks, which you can link right over to their funding page. And also, if you go to our Colorism Project at WordPress blog, we have a page up there also. So you can just click that link and hit support the film, and it'll take you straight over to their funding page. So everybody, I wish you two the best, continued success, and
thank you.
All the good stuff that could possibly come your way It will come your way, trust me.
Your blessing means the world to us. With you,
yes.
We can't fail.
Thank you very much. Like, thank you so much. I can't even express how honored we are to be here.
You're more than welcome. We're thrilled that you came on, and we had a great time. And for our listeners, if you remember, again, and I'm going to keep repeating myself to make sure everybody gets this, AcrossTheTracksFilms.com is the website. To go there, you can help fund this film, and we ask that you please seriously consider it. And even if you think about this, listeners, if 365 people gave $10 or $20 each, if we had 12,000 people give $1 each, think about, what this is going to do. So consider it. Be a part of the change that is needed. And this film is that change that we need to see in the industry, because it tells a story with a historical context, and it's real, and it brings us up to a current day. So once again, listeners, thank you for tuning in tonight. This is Dr. Culbreth. I'm signing off for the Dynamics of Colorism, and we'll see you on Thursday. Good night, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth. You may contact Dr. Culbreth at 1-800-905-2136. You may email your questions to drculbreth@colorismproject.com. We're looking forward to you tuning in next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, remember, dare to be different and dream in color. This is Dr. Culbreth, signing off for the Dynamics of Colorism. Good night, everyone.